B-Pod Studios.
Felger and Mez.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah.
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Sports.
Felger and Mez.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, 4 o'clock hour, Felger and Mez here on Agenda Free Friday. We're usually joined by Gasper. He's going to join us at 5. He's covering the Patriots today down at Gillette, and they've pushed back some of their media stuff, so he's going to join us for the 5 o'clock hour. This hour on the program, you will hear Tom Brady. I think they're going to take it live on the simulcast when Tom Brady hits the podium. We'll play a sound, if any is worthwhile, here on the program. Agenda Free Friday, I want to remind you, is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. BernardiAutoGroup.com, our fine new sponsors here on Agenda Free Friday. I have a giveaway for you, which I'll get to at the end of the segment, but as promised, I want to get back to your phones. Here is Paul in Tewksbury. What do you got, Paul, on the Patriots?
Yeah, so I was watching the film of Jim Burt hitting Montana last night, and I wonder if the Golden Boy took a couple shots like that in his greatest of all time career, if he would put up the numbers that he has.
He wouldn't.
I'm curious as to what your thoughts are.
He wouldn't. Of course, if Brady played in a different era when you're allowed to hit the quarterback and rough up the receivers, his numbers would obviously not be the same. Not even close. I still think he'd be the best of all time. He'd still have that winning quotient and that game management thing and the field vision and the smarts and the competitiveness, and he would still be the greatest of all time. His numbers would just be less. But of course the era factors into the numbers.
Oh, it has to. Every era does. I mean, you can't discount the era. Look, to me, the only guy that you would ever mention, I shouldn't say that. There are two guys I'd ever mention in the same breath as Brady. One's Montana, one's Elway. I just think that those guys were unique winners.
Competitive.
Yes. Yeah, unique winners. And so that's it. The rest of them, not on the same level.
Wyatt in Rhode Island. Hi, Wyatt.
Hey, guys. What's up?
What do you got?
I think Van Noy's a solid player. They got a really solid game on Sunday. But he is just the captain of...
He so is.
You know,
he's always.
It put a fat smile on my face when I saw Tavian Williams carry him for 5 yards to get a first down. Can't remember what point in the game it was, but it was awesome when it happened. I have to say, guys.
Okay, man. I think Van Noy is just a millennial. So he's on Twitter, and it's all like, bleh, 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 I guess you're not. Bleh, I guess we don't suck. So I just, you know, I think that's his deal. Doesn't seem like a bad guy. I think he's had a great year. I think he was one of your best defensive players in the game. You know, he should have gotten beat for a touchdown. Mahomes missed Williams. Williams did carry him on that play that he's talking about. I'll tell you what, if I'm the Rams, I'm thinking about Van Noy, who, again, in this game, was something of a weapon.
He was. He was awesome.
He was terrific. But I feel like most of Van Noy's stuff is rushing the passer, attacking the line of scrimmage, getting in the backfield. When he's got to play behind the line of scrimmage in space, I think he's susceptible. Like I think he's an accident waiting to happen. He's still not good in coverage.
No, and the other thing is, you know, if you can get your hands on him,
you can block him.
Yeah, he's not that big.
I'd make him cover. You know, as opposed to letting him rush the passer and get in the backfield where he's really got a good nose and a good knack and makes plays. Whatever I can do to get him in coverage and get him on his side of the line of scrimmage, I think that's a win on him.
I mean, Damian Williams was so open on that play, it wasn't funny.
And it's a tough cover for any running back, but, you know, for any linebacker, I mean, on that running back. But that's what I would do with Van Noy. Billy in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Billy. Billy, you got to turn down the TV or the radio, man. Okay, babe. You should know that by now. Rowan's calling us from Atlanta. Hi, Rowan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man.
Look, I know you're coming to Atlanta. I'll come see you when you're at the Radio Row, but great. I want you to have a great time while you're down here.
Okay, babe. Hopefully we will.
I love the Patriots. I'm a big Patriots fan, and I've enjoyed torching the local Atlanta radio station as well.
Okay, well, yeah, wait till you get a load of us. About 75,000 fat dudes with goatees and brewski jerseys selling you out of bite tall boys. Just wait.
And if you do come and say hello, you can explain to me why you live in that godforsaken place.
And for people that haven't done these road trips, the selling out of Bud Light, that's a real thing.
They sell it on the planes. The planes don't have enough.
It happened in Nashville for this game against the Titans in November.
Stock up on the Bud Light tall boys. Just safety tip. Trust me. You, as much as you think we can drink, we will drink more. It's ungodly. And because Atlanta has, sorry, the Rams have no fans to speak of. None. Zero. The only... Remember, they kept throwing the same three schmucks in New Orleans because those are the only three people wearing the Rams jerseys.
Right behind the Rams bench. A few of them very attractive, so it's friends and family. It had to be.
Someone's brother and wife.
Yeah, tell the bars in Atlanta that we order four at a time.
So it's going to be Mass Hole Central.
I put two in my back pocket.
Billy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, fella?
Good. Go ahead.
My point is this. Mass came up with three quarterbacks, and I agree with them, that they were leaders and so forth. And my question was going to be about leadership. There's no doubt the Patriots, the leader on offense is Brady. But on defense, I have a hard time finding a name for that defense to be a leader on this team. I really do.
Okay,
and
Billy.
I think that's why. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's a good point. I mean, not even leader, but tone setter. I mean, do they even have a tone setter? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, Rodney Harrison was a tone setter.
I mean,
or Bruschi was a tone setter. Or
Flowers?
You know, I think Dante Hightower, when he's at his best, is a tone setter. But I haven't seen that guy this year. Do they even have that guy?
Flowers, to me, is the closest thing you get. He's disruptive.
Oh, he's terrific.
But I hear you. I mean, I would, if you ask me who the leader of the defense was, I'd tell you it's one of two guys. Or Hightower. You know, Hightower's got the green dot, right?
Yes, usually. Does he still?
I think Van Noy does, I thought.
Oh, does he?
I think.
So I should know that.
I mean, Roberts has at times as well.
Okay, so I view Hightower as the guy who tells everybody where to go. You know, to me, that's sort of, and McCourty. Like, I think of those two guys as the ones who are directing traffic out there. But in terms of, you know, the guy who establishes the...
The meanness?
Yeah, the tone setter.
Yeah, there's one play that immediately comes to mind. Remember when Landon Roberts lit up Dalvin Cook in the game against Minnesota, like in the backfield? It was like, wow, that was a big hit, and Minnesota basically wilted for the rest of the night. But Landon Roberts, I mean, on a one-off?
I mean, it's harder and harder to find on any defense because
yeah.
They don't let you hit back there. It's a safety or a linebacker usually that's your tone setter.
Maybe good it's point. Just a collective mindset depending on the game.
I mean, do the Rams, I mean, is Donald their tone setter?
Oh, I would say so.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah.
I don't know if you
He's a bad man.
I don't know if you really have one. Jefferson in Foxborough. Hi, Jefferson.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Nice to hear from you guys again. Listen, Pat Nation needs to pray that Belichick doesn't act like a dink and do another Butler-like benching. I can't take that another year in a row. Now, my main question is, Aqib Talib and Brandon Cooks, how can they help the Rams game planning? Thanks for the call.
Okay, they can. I mean, they absolutely can. Now, how much? I don't know. I mean, LeGarrette Blount was on the Eagles last year. Did he help him in the Super Bowl? Did he help the Eagles' defense? Doesn't feel like it.
Oh, no. No way. No. I was going to say, did he help the offense? I mean, he had a good game. But in terms, no. I mean, I don't think that was a, you know, to me.
Yeah, in terms of schematically and things like that, I don't know.
No, but I think Cooks could probably give some insight into the secondary.
Yes.
I mean, he can give some insight into Gilmore, probably even McCourty, Harmon, guys.
Oh, no, so I'm sorry. I thought his value would be Brandon Cooks going to the Rams defensive coaches and saying, look, the X receiver on this play wants to do this. This is what Bill wants his Y to do when we're 3-by-1, and it doesn't always show up on film, but when I was there, he said, when you have outside, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
That to me feels like the value that Cooks can go to the Rams defensive coaches and say, this is what we were trying to do offensively.
Sure.
Yeah, well, considering how good he is at drawing penalties, if they're doing their homework, they see how great J.C. Jackson is and say, hey, if he's on me at any point, chuck it up to me and maybe we'll get a flag.
Well, so they should be able to see that on film, right? But the concepts and what they want to do, I don't know. It's got to be worth something because the Patriots do it. All these teams do it. They sign guys the week you play them in the regular season just to pick their brain.
See, I wonder if he get into the heads of some of those guys in the secondary. That's what I mean. It's like, this is how Gilmore acts. I've seen it in practice.
Right.
Like,
I'm sure those guys also know how soft he is.
Absolutely they do.
But and then there's even personal stuff. Like, you know, his girlfriend once, blah, 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 blah. You know, you want
Honey Nut Cheerios?
You want to mention some Honey Nut Cheerios or something. Like, I don't know. I mean, I wonder if it reaches that level. There was one time he crapped his pants after practice because go call him Poopy Pants. He really hates that. You know, just stupid stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he puked at halftime one game.
The caller says, hopefully he's not benching. Did he say, I hope he's not benching Malcolm Butler this year?
The or
Belichick?
The equivalent, yeah.
I'm curious about, I'm forming a little narrative here. it's off of Van Noy's comment that we played, you know, all day yesterday about we're not taking anything for granted, which I meant him to say we're not taking anything for granted this year because we may have taken it for granted last year and we were humbled by that loss last year. That was the quote that we kept playing. So that we're not taking anything for granted. Is there an acknowledgement there that they had a bad approach last year? That, and I kid, this keeps coming up. I'm surprised. And from not just from Dr. Evil himself, Adam Jones, but Murray's on this now. Bill going to that basketball game in the middle of the week. Like, I've heard this now in a couple different places in sort of Patriot circles. Like, so was the organization not happy with that? Or is this being brought up again? Is this like an indication that they weren't all there, that Bill goes to a basketball game in the middle of the week? I mean, I never thought that was a big deal at all. But is that somewhere on the list? Let me give you another one. So they're flying in Sunday this week, where the last couple Super Bowls, they've flown in on the Monday. And certainly last week, they flew in on a Monday and even sort of later in the day on the Monday, where they had to scramble to meet their first obligation this, you know, not that Bill cares about press conferences, but they had a league-mandated press conference at whatever time it was. I don't even remember. 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whatever it was. And apparently they flew in so late they had to scramble to get there in time. And so they sort of, they showed up on Monday. Did they have a certain mindset that they thought it was in the bag to the point where the coach can go to a basketball game if he wants during the week and he can bench one of his better defensive players for some sort of personal reason? They just thought they had it in the bag this time?
I mean, it's easier to say now, but yeah, looking back, it felt like the whole thing was loose. Remember how many of the dudes we saw just like wandering around the mall?
Yeah, but that's where their hotel was. I mean, I want to, but maybe Murray, and now, so why are they going on Sunday? Because maybe Bill's saying,
lock it in.
We're not going in last minute. We're going to go a day early. We're going to set everything up, and we're going to work this week.
If you're asking me,
we're taking nothing for granted. This is a work trip, no nonsense, and we're going to get there on Sunday. Plenty of time to unpack and get to work. So I wonder.
If you're asking me, are they looking back on last year and saying we got caught off guard a little, we're going to change some things? My answer is yes.
I mean, I do know that people are surprised they're flying on Sunday because they hadn't done that recently. They didn't do it last year. And there's no real reason for them to be there on Sunday. There's no obligation. The first thing is a media thing on Monday. So, I don't know. There's a thought for you.
And I heard Jones last night, too. No Atlanta Hawks games this week. So
there's no NBA game, but there is an indoor lacrosse game, apparently.
Indoor lacrosse, yes. It's the Georgia Swarm are hosting the New England like Black Swans or something like that on Friday night. So, you know, maybe Bill shows up to that one.
Friday night?
Friday, February 1st.
That would be a little strong.
Younger Naz, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
White in the backfield to the right of Brady. Short motion by Edelman. Shotgun snap on 3rd and 10 for Brady. In the pocket. Throws down the middle. Edelman open in midfield. Makes the catch. And then lunges forward across the 45. And the Patriots have a fresh set of downs.
He likes squirrel. Loves squirrel. It's an audible by Edelman. Mid-route. Hands up. Brady sticks it on him. The Iron Man on a big 3rd down conversion. 3rd down and he picks up 20.
Patriots to the 3rd and 10 from the 45. First series of overtime. Shotgun snap to Brady. Firing down the middle. Caught by Edelman. On the run to the left side of the 30. He had just enough separation to make that catch.
That's a 15-yard dagger on 3rd and 10 again.
You're too old!
White off the left side of Brady.
Ball away.
Sets the protections. Waits on the snap from Andrews on 3rd and 10. In the pocket. Throws down the middle. Gronk makes the catch at the 20, and he's tackled. Whoa. Caught the shoelaces by Berry as he skids to the 15. First down for New England.
Feed him. Feed the big boy. He is filling it. It is a slant, and you're 15 yards away.
3rd and long conversions times 3 on this drive in overtime.
All right, the Patriots on 3rd down. Huge, huge factor against Kansas City. They were also great against the Chargers, but they did everything well against the Chargers. Hard to say that was the key. But excellent 3rd down team. How are the Rams on 3rd down? It's a big matchup, don't you think?
Absolutely.
You know, especially if the Pats want to run the ball and establish the run and all that. You generally, when you do that, you're getting yourself in 3rd down situations, so you got to be able to convert. How do the Rams do in this regard? And, you know, I feel like most people assume that's a clear win for the Patriots. In the regular season, the Rams had the 12th best in the league, 12th best third down defense. Opponents converted at 37.2%, which is pretty good. Okay, 12th. Not through the roof, but, you know, good. Top third of the league. No. Top third of the league? Not quite.
Would you say 12th?
Yeah.
Not quite. No.
Not quite. But either way.
Top 40%.
In the playoffs, though, they've been better. Tied for the second best third down percentage defensively, 29.2%. And when you go back and look at some of their games, I mean, they really did a good job. In New Orleans, the Saints were 6 of 14 on third down, which is 43%, which is, you know, not great. It's average at best. That wasn't great. But against Dallas, they held Dallas 1 of 10 on third down. 1 of 10. And I just started looking back a little bit into the last regular season games. Because, again, if we're going to credit the Patriots with flipping a switch and figuring it out in week 16, 17, which is what Ted Johnson and others have done, right? Then I have to do the same thing with the Rams. I can do that, even though they played horrible teams just like you did. Week 17 against San Francisco, they held the Niners to 3 of 11 on third down, 27%. Week 16 at Arizona, held the Cardinals to 2 of 11 on third down, 18%. Even that week 15 loss they had at the Eagles, where they lost that game at home, the Eagles only converted 4 of 13 third downs, 31%. So the Rams, the two playoff games against the Saints, they were merely average on third down. But the previous four before that, excellent. Third down defense, 10%, 27%, 18%, 31%.
I'll tell you, though, some of those third downs against the Saints were big ones. They had two down by the goal line. I mean, they forced field goals the early part of the game.
Oh, huge, means, huge
right down which there. Means they stopped touchdowns down there.
So I didn't look up red zone stuff. But this is just another case. So we're giving the Patriots credit for flipping a switch, and they have. I wonder if the Rams have flipped a switch defensively. Again, they ranked as the 19th defense in the league, and they use yards per game, which is a grossly flawed stat, but I'll just give it to you. They ranked 19th in the regular season in defense. Yards per game in the playoffs, they're second. The second-ranked defense in the playoffs. They only allow 299 yards a game in those two games. Baltimore was first with the 243 that they allowed in their one playoff game. So, in terms of yards per game, much improved.
And again, one of those games, New Orleans at home. Like, you know, and you can tell me the Saints' offense isn't what it was, and that's true, but still, I don't care. You stop the Drew Brees in the dome, you're doing something right.
Points per game, they ranked 16th in the league. I'm sorry, 13th in the league. They ranked 13th in the league in the regular season, allowing 24 points a game. In the playoffs, they ranked 6th, 22.5. Again, right in the middle of the 12 playoff teams, but they are allowing fewer points in the playoffs than they did in the regular season. The Patriots, by the way, playoff points per game, dead last. Dead last in 12th. I don't think you've played bad defense. I'm just, by comparison, that's where the Pats rank in points per game defensively in the playoffs. Here's a big one for me, and that's the rushing defense. And the Rams' rushing defense is what I want to know, because the Pats have done such a great job running the ball. It's been a big part of their offense here, a big part of how they establish everything. And, you know, it's really key for them. And I've seen a lot of things written that, you know, this is another good opponent for them, that the Rams are an undersized defensive front. Talked about, you know, Donald, for as good as he is only 280. They play a lot of safeties down at linebacker, a lot of sets where they only play the one linebacker. They're light on defense, so you should be able to run on them like you've been able to run on everybody else. I've read this now. And that got me to thinking, like, wait a minute. Didn't they just stop the Saints on the ground, who want to run the ball and is a good running team? Two good running backs and, like, a running team? I think they're top 10 in the league in rushing during the regular season.
Yeah, they both were. The Saints and Dallas were both top 10.
And then they just shut down Ezekiel Elliott?
Yeah, did an awesome job against the Cowboys that night.
And a great Dallas defensive offensive line. You've got a great offensive line, right? And so it's a big strength of yours. But doesn't Dallas have every bit, from a run-blocking standpoint, every bit the offensive line that you do?
Yeah, they're gigantic, yes.
They're massive. So
they have one of the best tackles and one of the best guards in the league.
So in yards per attempt allowed, which is, again, the metric Bill wants to use, yards per attempt, the Rams in the regular season ranked dead last in the NFL.
5.1, was it?
5.1 yards per attempt. So on this metric, they were the worst rush defense in the league in the regular season. In the playoffs, their rushing defense ranked second. After allowing 5.1 yards per carry in the regular season, they are allowing only 2.3 yards per carry in the playoffs.
And did you look at the numbers against New Orleans specifically?
I've looked at both. So, and the Saints and Dallas was pretty much dead even. Against the Saints ran 21 times for 48 yards, 2.3 yards attempt on the button. And this isn't even a second half. In the first half, when the Saints were trying to establish the run, they gained only 13 yards on 9 carries.
Yeah, Ingram and Kamara combined 17 for 46. It's under 3 a carry.
So, in the first half, though, it was 9 for 13 for 1.4 yards per carry. So, the Saints, a good running team with a good offensive line, could not establish the run against the Rams. Dallas, 22 rushes, 50 yards as a team.
With Zeke in a line.
With a massive line and so that's a 2.3 yards per carry average. They tried to establish the run and didn't. Now, in the first half, they were better. So maybe there's a second guess there. In the first half, Dallas ran 9 times for 40 yards, which is, you know, just over 4 yards a carry, which is decent production there.
Sure, it's like 4.5, yeah.
And they didn't really run as much. In the second half, they were playing from behind. But the Rams hardly got gashed in that game. So I just ask, did they flip a switch?
Yes, it's two guys in the middle, specifically Sue. Donald plays all the time.
Have the Patriots flipped a switch? Did the Rams on defense flip a switch?
I think they did. I mean, again, I respect the talent on that defense. You know, that's the thing that sticks out to me as I look at it and go. And to me, the variable there is Sue, and to a degree, Tlaib, because he missed a lot of the regular season, too. But that's pass defense. But overall, yes. Those two guys on the interior there are absolute freaking monsters. And Sue's a bum. Okay, he's a bum. He doesn't want to play.
He's a loser.
Okay, he is. But in the playoffs, is he not going to show up? Like, I have a hard time believing that one. You want to tell me he shuts it down during the regular season? Fine, but it feels to me, look, Soucy just sat here and said that, Bob Soucy sat here a little while ago and said that Sue's playing well. And now you're in the Super Bowl and he's going to, like, pull a no-show? I don't see it.
So it looks to me like the Rams have gotten serious on defense. And so some of those regular season rankings, I don't know if they're really valid. You know, just like your week 2 performance in Jacksonville and week 3 in Detroit really isn't valid right now. I mean, if I go back and average in all those, I mean, Sony Michel, how'd he look in Detroit? You know, and how did he look early? How'd they run the ball? Even as late as Pittsburgh, they tried to run the ball and couldn't leak a drop because they just couldn't.
No, early in the year, Sony Michel sucked and blew.
So, to me, look at the recent. Look at what, you know, if we're doing this with the Patriots, that started week 16, 17, they flipped a switch and found out who they were, and that's the accurate gauge of who they are right now. Do the same thing with the Rams. They're stopping the run. They're stopping the run now, which they hadn't done during the regular season. You know what? I'm forming a prediction, which you know will be wrong, because all my predictions are wrong. I bet no one's going to run the ball in this game.
It feels to me like the defenses are going to control this game.
I bet no, because I just think if you commit to stopping the run, you can stop the run. If you commit to it, if you go into a game saying we're going to stop the run, and you reach this level, you can stop the run. It's just a commitment. It's like NBA defense. You just try, just commit to it. And my bet is the Pats will say you're not going to get your running game going. The Rams, you know, Jared's going to have to go back 50 times and beat us through the air. And I think the Rams have shown they can stop the run. If they can stop the Cowboys on the ground and the Saints on the ground, why can't they stop you on the ground? So that just occurred to me. We'll get back to your phones after Murray's update here. Don't anywhere.
No, early in the year, Sony Michel sucked and blew.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, right to your phones, as promised. Tim in Grafton has something for us on Agenda Free Friday. Go.
Hi, Tim.
What are your thoughts? Felger, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What are you, generally speaking, what are your thoughts on QBR?
A quarterback rating? I think it's imperfect, but I think it's better than most. You know, if you're going to give me one stat to gauge a quarterback, I'll take that one, even though it's imperfect.
I think it's utterly useless, and here's why. unless you're going to give me his QBR on third down from last week, I don't think you're going to do that because it doesn't suit your agenda. But I think I'm picking on ball gag Michael from earlier in the week. But the thing is, no one's going to remember that he had a subpar game statistically. Everyone's going to remember how he was on third down. It's a lot like Ortiz in 13. No one remembers that his batting average, well, Maz remembers, I'm sure, but no one remembers that his batting average was around 200. They remember the grand slam, or Jackie Bradley Jr. in the ALCS last year, this past season.
No, I remember.
Well, I know you do, Maz. Of course you do. But my point is, he was clutch, and that clutch gene is there, and that's what we're going to remember. So I hate the QBR, and Carlton and your agenda can all go screw, go past.
Okay. There's no, there's no one stat then you can tell me that, you know, accurately gauges. Touchdown to interception is pretty good. Like, that's good. My problem with quarterback rating is it accounts for yards, and I think yards are useless. I don't care about your yards. So that's my problem with the QBR stat. Other than that, though, completion percentage, touchdown, interception. That's what it is. That, to me, completion percentage is important, as is touchdown to interception ratio. I think that accurately gauges. There's no, give me one stat that accurately gauges it better than that.
Well, the other thing is, but if we're going to give Brady credit for that, and we should, then don't we have to say the same about Goff?
Yeah, there you go. Try getting that out of these people. But the thing, Brady's quarterback rating was 77, which is subpar for him. But again, I think it just depends on whether they won or lost. If D Ford's not offsides, and that's the final play, he's got three interceptions, including one in the end zone, that loses in the game. Would it be unfair to mention those things? I mean, you don't think I would accurately depict, you know, his day?
No, I think it totally would. Again, this is why I felt this way from the beginning. Brady did not have a great game. And I think that, you know, and I'm not just talking about the deflected interceptions. There were some balls that he threw behind guys. You know, Gronk, I remember a couple of them, and even one of the ones that Patterson dropped.
A few to White that he made were behind him.
Another good one, Mark.
No, but just in general, and I'm sorry, the amount of great catches his guys made.
Unbelievable. So really, I look at it and I say, you know, I don't think it was one of Brady's, like, all-time games. Now, the finish was off the charts. I mean, he was insanely good. So, you know, this is why I say, like, I don't, like, look at Brady and go, this is one of his historic performances. It wasn't.
Bob, I have 1 minute for you, so get right to it.
You know, you say the Patriots are lucky and fortunate. You know, Felger, you're the luckiest guy. Thank God for Rob Parker and Max Kellerman, because you are the biggest DB when it comes to the Patriots. You're just slightly smarter than those two because you're able to hang on the fence. Felger, this is what I can't stand about you. When you bring about the Chiefs game, did Mahomes have a great game? No. But when it mattered the most, that's when Brady came through. Here's what you should be talking about Felger and Maz. The reason why the Patriots are so good and they have been is because they are the most mentally tough team in the league. Case in point, when that play, that muff punt, what happened? Brady threw an interception and the Chiefs scored. Any other team during that series, I think the Chiefs took the lead after that touchdown. Any other team would have folded up and said it's not our day. Case in point, the Saints the game prior. Look what happened with that non-call. They even got the ball in overtime. It let them affect them on the field, and they lost. Why don't you focus on that stuff and say, whoa, if he wasn't offsides, he was offsides. Why even bring it up?
I know you don't want to hear it, that you got a break, but I'm sorry it's what happened. And did the Chiefs fold up their tent? Seems to me like they got the ball with 32 seconds left and fought their way for a field goal to tie the game, and then they lost the coin toss. That's what happened. I'm sorry to bring up what happened, but they didn't fold their tent. They kept fighting to the final whistle, to the point where, again, with 32 seconds and one timeout in 20-degree weather, went down and kicked a game-time field goal and then lost a coin flip. So, sorry to tell you what happened again. It's not like they quit. Saints, I can't speak for. Did they quit or did Breeze get loose with the ball in overtime? Seems to me that's what happened to him.
Oh, gosh, that interception was absolutely god-awful. That was a Bledsoe play.
Here's Dan in Quincy. Hi, Daniel.
Felger, now, you spent some one-on-one time with Belichick, correct?
Wait.
Cohogs down there and untuck it, right?
A million years ago, but yes.
Okay, but does he strike you as being, A, a dink, or a guy that would put his own ego ahead of winning a game, let alone a Super Bowl?
So I've never said that. I've never said you put let me answer it.
I'm asking you.
I think he's gotten to a point in his career where he wants to do it his way, and he thinks he can win doing it that way, but it's important for him to do it his way.
Okay, but to him, it's been successful. He treats what he does like a field, like a general in the Army. He can't show any weakness. He can't never admit to his team. It's only important for what he knows, not to the players. So I just don't. Do you believe he would deliberately put his own ego ahead of winning a football game, given the amount of time he must put? I guarantee you, he puts 10 times the time in that Brady does.
They're not mutually exclusive. He thought he could have won the game without Malcolm Butler. I bet he still believes that. I bet he looks at it and says,
"Wait a minute. Do you think they lost because he didn't play Malcolm Butler?
I don't think he put him in the best position to succeed.
No. That's not what I asked you. I know the other two beside you think that. Yep. I know Murray does.
It was a factor, Danny. It was a factor.
We don't know because the guy didn't play.
You're right. We don't know. Here's what we know. Okay. Did he put his team in the best position to succeed? That we can categorically say for fact. We don't know what would have happened or would have not happened. So I've never said they lost because of that. But here's the question. Did he put his team in the best position to succeed?
Whoever was going to get the ball last was going to win.
That's not true.
And that's the way the game happened.
Well, the Patriots had the ball late with the chance to win the game, and they didn't.
Patriots had the ball with a last possession, and then Brady fumbled.
Yeah, actually, when Brady got stripped, the defense held into a field goal, preserving a tie. They had another shot. They were down 8 after the first one.
If you don't think Bill puts his personality into some of his decisions, then you're just, I think you live in fantasy land. And that's not to say that he puts his ego over winning. He wants to do it his way, and he thinks he can win doing it his way. And so sometimes it bites him. And there's decisions like this across the board. And here's one we haven't hit on, but maybe we will at some point. Is their next defensive coordinator going to be Greg Schiano?
Certainly looking that way.
Greg Schiano. Is that because that's the best, most qualified guy for the job, or is it Bill's buddy? Mike Lombardi, that bobo, that dolt. Was he the best guy for the job, or was it Belichick's buddy and the other team was paying his contract so he was affordable? Why was he here? I mean, come on, Greg Schiano. Would you give me a break with this? I don't want to yell. I mean, they haven't officially made it yet, so maybe he won't be the defensive coordinator. But that's the guy? And why? Why is he here? Why is it Greg Schiano?
And the other thing is that Danny said, do you think he would deliberately put his ego? And my answer is deliberately no. But his ego factors in. Like and you put it the right way, I think, which is to say that he thought he could have won the game without Butler.
And I bet he still feels that way. I bet he says, we had the ball with 4 minutes left and Tom Brady with the ball in his hands with a touchdown to go ahead. That's just where we wanted to be. We were all set.
So some of the guys he played ahead of Butler were Jordan Richards and Johnson Bademosi, who are now both gone.
Both let go. So if he felt those guys were so good, don't you think he'd be around here?
I just think that, again, people say, do you think he deliberately, like Bill sits there and goes, you know what? No, screw this. I'm willing to blow the game over this. I'm doing it my way. No, he doesn't do it that way. But his ego, inspires him to think that we'll win in spite of it. Like, we'll win anyway. He puts too much emphasis. It's almost like he's too confident in his own ability.
Long commercial-free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5
The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
You always talk about the next one, it's the special one. You just talk about that, how even though you've been to 8, this one feels really special right now.
Yeah, these are memories, that'll last a lifetime. I'm blessed to find something that I love to do, that I love to work at. and that's probably been the biggest blessing in my life. I love, you know, working hard at trying to make improvements, and every year we start at a different place. I love the grind of it, you know, being in the moment. You know, this was just an incredible win. We'll remember this one for the rest of our life.
Tom Brady after the AFC Championship game last week. I know how I feel about this. I'll just ask the question. What are the odds percentage after this game?
5%.
Yeah, between 0 and 10%.
10%?
Yeah.
Is it 1 in 10 chance?
No, you said, like, that's low. That's still low.
10%? There's a 10% chance he's going to retire? That's high.
Oh, it's still low.
You think 5's high?
0. I think 5's high. Mass has a 1 in 20 chance. Murray says, well, 1 in 10 chance. That's too close for comfort. 0. My opinion, not that I have any, you know, sort of knowledge on this, but, you know how I feel about this. Brady can't do it. It'd be one of the all-time great dick moves of all time to make sure his owner trades the next guy and then retires a year later.
The reason I say 10%, though, because Beadle's kind of convinced me a little bit because we went back and forth with this in the post game last week.
No, Beadle believes there's a chance. I think he's got it at 5 to 10%.
Yeah. Oh, I think Beadle thinks it's like 50-50.
No. It's not that strong.
But either way, like you say, people would be mad. It's a total dick move. While I would feel that way, too, it's a perfect exit. They win this, no one's truly going to be mad. The fan base will not be that upset at him.
So Beadle...
I would be.
Oh, my God. You should...
Oh, this show, you had a year's worth of content.
Well, I mean, never mind the fan base.
I was thinking more like 3 years.
You know what that does to Robert?
Oh, yeah, no. Screws the team. I think it kills his brand after everything that he's talked about and the TB12 method and all of that. Like, you can't walk, dude. Like, especially with the way that you've played the last couple of weeks. And if you win this thing, and if he gets named MVP of this game again, you can't walk.
Well, but so Beatles' point is that's when you should walk.
Right. Perfect exit. No one's going to be mad. It's the perfect out.
I mean, I have a hard time believing he's gonna walk at this stage. I can't imagine that he wouldn't. It feels like as the year has gone on, he has become a little bit more forceful every time he opens his mouth about coming back. So, you know, at the beginning of the year, I'd have put the odds higher. I mean, you know, the chances higher that he'd walk. But now, given the way the year went and has finished and the whole Guerrero thing being resolved, and it feels like it's calmed down. I'd be surprised, significantly surprised, if he didn't come back.
So, again, I just think you can't. You can't leverage them trading the next guy, and then you quit a year later. That is doing your owner dirty, man, after he stood up for you there. So, you can't do that. I think it was just bad form for him to skip the offseason after they traded the other guy. I mean, that made me, never mind retiring. Oh, my God. Whole nother level. I also think, I also want to take these guys at their word a little bit. Like, when Kyrie Irving stands up in front of a stadium full of season ticket holders and says, I'm resigning, I'm not going to call him a liar. He's going to resign. And when Tom Brady says now over and over and over and over again to 45, he's going to retire at 41? You're not going to do it like that. No, come on. I'm going to give him more credit than that. So I don't think there's any chance. But primarily, it's I don't think he can. I don't think you can.
Well, look, the owner bailed him out, did him a huge favor. Like, that's a serious commitment. And then, again, the other thing is, I don't know, I go back, and we made a big deal of it at the time. We should have made a bigger deal. Jonathan, was it the Atlanta Super Bowl when Jonathan
Kraft? Tom gets to decide.
I mean, that was unbelievable.
So
to say that, like, so Brady can play as long as he wants?
Here's what I believe. I don't think it's dependent on win or a loss. I really don't. I think it's more about his, you know, how much grief his wife is giving him, right? And how much time he spent away from the family, if he really wants to spend it away from the family or not. The business and how much that's tugging on him and how much he wants to fully devote himself to that and how it reflects on the business. If he retires at 41, like you said, does that kill part of the pitch?
I think so.
Of TB12, he's really got to play to 43, 44 to really separate himself from everybody else to give TB12 all that runway. Like, I think those are the factors. Win or loss? It's not like Elway, like he needed to win the championship. Elway's first championship was the year before.
Well, the thing that gives me a little concern, too, is he's always said he would walk when he really sees dip in his play. I mean, we saw it. Did he see it? Did he feel that way?
Yeah, but it was marginal. It wasn't a big enough dip for him to walk away. He said, as long as I, you know, until I suck, he definitely didn't suck. He just wasn't as awesome as he was. So, no, and I think he can maintain that. Again, I think he'll be better next year. Providing he fully commits and they surround him, and, you know, I don't see that falling off. To me, it's all these outside factors. All those family, business, that thing. Maybe contract a little bit.
Oh, definitely contract. I'm glad you brought that one up because it just popped into my head a minute ago and I already forgot it.
I mean,
for crying out loud, given how my brain works.
I hope he holds their feet to the fire. I hope he finally holds out and says, no, I'm not signing that. Tom, once, just say no. Say, no, I'm not signing that.
Mike, the contract has to be an issue. Has to be.
I hope it is.
He's going to go into the final year of his deal for the first time ever, basically, and take have a $27 million cap hit. Well, so what I'm saying is that, and I know he doesn't care about the cap hit, but I think the team does. And so I think there's impetus there for both sides to do something. Brady's going to play 1 year guaranteed.
When I say hope, I just want him to stand up to the team and demand what he's worth and really, you know, stand up for himself. No, I'm not signing that this time, Robert. No, I'm not signing that. No. If you want to keep me, exclusive rights, the franchise tag is $27 million, and there it is. But I'm not signing that. You know, he always talks tough. I know internally, like, and this is why a lot of this stuff bubbles up, that, you know, the contract's in, because I know internally, he says, I'm not doing it this time. No, no. This time they got to pay me. And he'll say that behind the scenes. He'll say that behind the scenes, or his people will say that behind the scenes. And then Robert calls him in for breakfast and says, Tom, I'd really do me a favor. And he signs. It's like, so is he really going to stand up for himself this time and really demand the money?
Well, what do you think?
No, he'll cave. Nope, he'll cave. But you'll hear the contract will leak out because he'll talk tough. But when push comes to shove, he'll cave like he always has.
I mean, they have no leverage over him at all right now. None. So I don't know. Maybe this is the year. Like, I thought they were going to do this last year, and they didn't, other than Eddie Etling in the seventh round, for crying out loud.
A bookmaking friend of mine. There are retirement odds out there. Tom Brady retiring plus 1,200. Not retiring, minus 25.
So, oh, gosh.
So that's 3-1. Like, that's not even, well, we're saying, you know, 20-1. It's actually 3-1. So that,
yeah.
Those are high. I mean, those are.
You have to bet 2,500 to make 100 that he'll retire?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I screwed up. Never mind. Stop. I should not have done that live on the air. You're right. It's 25-1 against.
It's like 4%.
Right. So there you go.
They're placing it at about 4%.
Very good for you.
Can That's you ask ridiculous. A bookie friend if he has Kyrie Irving to the Knicks odds? I'd like to place a little wager on that.
Bookie friend who just texted me. Text me odds of Kyrie Irving to New York. Do you have that? Bill Belichick retiring, yes, plus 250.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Plus 250, meaning 2,500.
Yeah.
Okay. Plus
20. No, not 2,500. It's a $100 bet.
Plus 2,500.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Plus 2,500. No is minus 5,000.
Oh, so they put that at 2%.
Right.
Well, so they say there's less of a chance of Bill walking than Tom walking.
Don't you think that's true?
No.
Really?
No, I think there's a bigger chance that Bill walks.
Here's your answer. No one's walking. And it wouldn't even surprise me if Gronkowski came back. No one's walking. That's my prediction.
Gronk's done,
so
Mike.
I'll take
Gronk's walking.
I'll take all this action.
Gronk's done.
Where's Dan Lifshatz when I need him?
What are you doing?
What?
Bookie friend. Here comes...
Oh, no, he's an over-under podcast guy, him and Joe Murray.
Okay. Yeah, what are you talking about? Don't be letting the cat out of the bag.
This is what I'm saying. Let's not name names, shall we? Joey the Nose.
He hosts a podcast.
Mr. Pickles, a bookie friend.
You know, I agree. I am good at math.
It's just you in this room.
Because we're complete disasters. Complete disasters.
You did that 10% thing to me, and it was like, huh?
Huh? What?
I got hit over the head with a brick.
3-0 on coin flips is what percent?
12.5.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Have you gotten confirmation on that?
No.
Okay, Gasper is standing by. He'll join us next hour. No commercials, just an update.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.